There are fears of a possible grounding of Ghana's public pension scheme because a fresh audit report has revealed that the Social Security and National Insurance Trust, SNIT, may not be able to pay full pension benefits to contributors by 2036. This is revealed in the latest International Labour Organization's actuarial evaluation report on SNIT. Labour unions in the past few weeks have taken on for failing to remit some Tier 2 pension deductions to the fund managers. According to them, the last time government paid their Tier 2 contribution was in June 2023, owing them 9 months deduction from July 2023 to March 2024. Let's get a breakdown of the ILO report that makes these stunning revelations, and I'll be sharing with you shortly. It says SNIT's reserves depleting, total income will no longer be sufficient to pay benefits to 2036. And total indebtedness of SNIT as of 31st December 2021 is 9.35 billion Ghana cedis. And it goes on to say late payment by government to SNIT stands at 6.9 billion, total of 73.7% of the indebtedness of SNIT as of 31st December 2021. Now, the late payment of SNIT contribution leads to 1.3% drop in investment return each year. Now, government shifts an important part of cost to the private sector by late payment. Now, reacting to this revelation, President of the National Association of Graduate Teachers, Angel Kabonu, and Director of Research and Policy at the Trades Union Congress, Dr. Kwabena Nyakwoto, said SNIT must make the report public immediately.
I don't have the copy, and that is the point I said, that we should utilize our membership on the SNIT board.
Yeah, but it's shocking, isn't it? You have members on the SNIT board. An actuarial study has been done, and you don't have it. Angel Kabonu, have you seen a copy?
Absolutely not. They did not even announce whether
they were doing it.
And this says by 2036, they will be struggling to pay full benefits.
Exactly. If nothing is done. And they have no recommendations.
Sorry, Franklin.
It's not rocket science. I mean, if clearly speaking, government is not paying already, that's half of your contribution is gone anyway. And secondly, if the options to invest, the ones you are receiving are also limited, and they are not doing proper investments because the politician is also interfering, clearly it tells you that the funds will dwindle anyway. Mm. So even without seeing the actuarial work, it's clear that by 2030, probably even 2036, nobody will not be able to do the proper social security networking. And I think they need to go and learn what happened in, was it Peru? When people, I mean, there are pension experts who have managed that country's pensions very well.
I need to quickly ask the workers. Kabonu, 30 seconds. Are you going to demand for this study? Because that tells you where your pensions are and what they are going to be, what's going to happen to them. Are you going to demand that?
We have to demand it and make it public.
Dr. Otu?
Absolutely. I mean, it says something about our representation on these institutions. You understand? So we definitely have to get hold of these actuarial studies.
I've been joined by the Executive Director of the Africa Center for Retirement Research, Abdullah Mashoud, for more on this. Grateful for your time, Mr. Mashoud. You say there is more to the problem than we know how. Mr. Mashoud?
Hello. Yes, actually, I can hear you.
Yes, you said there's more to the problem than we know. How so?
Okay, so basically, Section 53 of the Service Security requires that an external actuarial evaluation is conducted on the scheme every 2 years. And the objective is to just ascertain the exact health situation of the scheme. Accordingly, in 2011, actuarial evaluation was conducted, and the opinion that was expressed then was that everything was fine. But in 2014 and 2017, the team acted even the team of finance was still up within the system today. 2014, given that the scheme is set to decrease by 3%. Then, 3 years that evaluate whether it was because at this time came up with the 5% now. Now, there is a system by which I think, you know, just as fast.
I can't.
There are 12 that was summarized and there are 12. And the hospital.
Yes. Mr. Abdallah, we are really struggling to hear you. If you can reposition yourself, then we can call you back to have a clearer conversation. Right, let's try one more time and see if it works better.
Okay, good. So I can go on?
Yes, I think it's a bit good. Okay now.
Okay, good. So what I was saying is that the recent actual valuation report, which was published in January this year, we carried the same opinion just like the last two in 2014 and 2017. And I'm saying that actual valuation reports are summarized into what is termed as an actual opinion. And the opinion is just a statement that is testifying whether the scheme is financially sustainable over the projection period. The valuation certifies that this scheme is not financially sustainable over the period covered by the projection. And the reserves are set to deplete by 2036. This one does not, what do they call it? Let's not get ourselves deceived. What this one means in layman's terms is that the scheme would not be able to pay benefits fully and on time by 2036, which is not very far away from us. We're just talking about 12 years away. The reserve depletion date is the main variable when an actual valuation report is issued. Regardless of the jurisdiction, anywhere in the world, when actual valuation report is published, the key variable that they are looking at for is the depletion date, because all analysis and all variables are feeding or are coming together to really form when the scheme is set to deplete. So our focus is on the depletion date. In this case, they are telling us that the scheme is set to deplete by 2036. And what is accounting for all this? Government indebtedness is inflicting the biggest pain to the sustainability of the Smith scheme. Imagine government as the sole guarantor of the scheme violating Section 3.9 and Section 3.3 of the Act 760, which requires that contributions are paid on timely basis to allow time for investments. Government has consistently violated this particular section of the law by delaying contribution payments. And that is inflicting or hurting the social security financial sustainability. We're talking about investment outcomes. If you take the last 8 years, SMIT has recorded just three positive real returns on investment. The other five are negative. And we need to ask questions. Why are we continuously recording negative real returns on investment of the fund? Administrative cost. Administrative cost is the share of workers' contribution that is used to manage the scheme. Administration cost is very, very high. And I think it's about time the National Pension Regulatory Authority developed, an expense policy to help check or control the expenditure of the scheme as far as, management is concerned. The picture we currently have to be worse, considering the state of migration in recent times. Remember, the migration has triggered a lot of workers, active workers moving out of the country. And once workers are leaving the country, it means we are reducing the contributor population. And when contributor population is going down as a result of economic challenges, migration, loss of jobs, et cetera, and pensioner population keeps growing, it affects what we call dependency ratio. And dependency ratio is just telling you where the scheme is going. Not very long ago, we had, 17 contributing to support one pensioner. As we speak today, the number has come down to 7. And that is telling us that demography and economy is also having an impact on the financial sustainability of the scheme.
Is there a way that we can get this resolved so we don't bear the brunt, as you're saying?
Yeah, so the effect is that if nothing is done right now, what is going to happen is that we are all going to wake up one day and we are told that the social security system can no longer pay benefits, or at best, benefits are going to reduce. I'm not sure we want to get there. So the first thing we need to do is to get government to comply with Section 3.3 of the Act, which requires that nobody should delay payment of contribution. And government, imagine government accounting for 73% of the total debt of the trust. That is huge. And being the sole guarantor, I think we'll have to call on government to make good the debt situation. We also need to deepen transparency among stakeholders on the help of the scheme. And what do you recall? When we're talking about stakeholders, I'm talking about the National Pension Regulatory Authority, the Worker Union, the Trade Union Congress, the media. Everybody needs to come on board. We need to be interested in the health of the scheme. Just as I indicated, and in all this, Parliament has to lead the line. It is Parliament that will have to lead the line and really ensuring that the scheme is sustainable into the future. We also need to get MPRA, as I said, to develop an expense policy guideline, because the share of workers' contribution that is used to manage the scheme is so very, 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 very high. So we need to deepen consultation. And I would like to conclude by saying that Parliament needs to ensure that whenever an actuarial valuation is done, the Director General will need to appear before Parliament and present the situation. You know, I'm sure in the presentation you would have indicated to us what is accounting for the position of the scheme. If it has to do with demography, you have to come to the place and share the risk. So that when it comes to, you know, calling stakeholders, the employer, employer association, the worker unions, when it gets to the point where we have to come in and look at the risk, quantify the magnitude of the problem, and share the risk. For instance, the actual valuation report did indicate that we need to increase the contribution rate. If you have been hiding an actual valuation report from the public or from the contributors who are the real owners of the business, you can all of a sudden come and tell them that, look, the scheme is heading for a crash and I need you to increase the contribution rate. Currently, the scheme is receiving 11% of workers' salaries every month. And what we are told in the actual valuation report is that this is not enough. We were told that in 2014, nothing was done. We were told the same thing in 2017, nothing is done. Another one is being told, and I think it's about time we come around the table, examine the magnitude of the problem, and begin to deal with it. Otherwise, we all wake up one morning, and we are told that the funds are depleted, and as I said, Parliament need to lead the line in this case. We need Parliament to salvage the situation. Social security is a very serious development issue. It is social protection, mechanism. It's a poverty reduction tool, and it's about time we focus attention in this area.
I'm grateful for your time. Abdullah Mashud is Executive Director, Africa Center for Retirement Research, and President of Imani Africa, meanwhile, says organized labor must sue government for mismanagement and late remittance of deductions.
In addition to the recommendations I made about asking for penalties to be paid or interest to be paid, I think the workers should also go for lawyers. And I think, yes, they should be able to sue the government to make sure that these monies are paid immediately they are received. It's very important. Because, you see, if you're a private actor and you fail to pay your SNIT contributions, the speed with which you are taking through the court, that's a 30-day court, you'll be jailed right now if you don't take care, right? So why should the government be the one actually misbehaving? It's not the best.
NAGRAC President Angel Kabono has warned they will embark on an industrial action if the government doesn't pay the monies by May 2.
Possibility if they fail us on the promise they made to us that they are going to pay the monies. If the 2nd of May comes and we realize that they have just given us a red herring, then they should expect us to take a very serious action on behalf of our workers and the future of our workers. We are not going to compromise on this at all, and this misbehavior should stop in our country. where money, statutory monies are collected and they are not meted to the designated institutions. It's affected Get Fund, it's affected health funds, it's affected district assembly, common fund. I mean, every dedicated fund is affected by this behavior of the politician, and we cannot allow this to continue.
From pensions, the often overlooked psychological problems associated with pregnancy and childbirth continue to drive many pregnant women and childless women into depression and psychiatric institutions. 38-year-old Sika, whose journey has been marred by such challenges, has been sharing the reality of maternal mental health struggles. Rejoice Semifakwesu's report read to you.
The arrival of Sika's child brought immense joy to her, having lost her first child. After that painful loss of her first child, she found herself under intense pressure from her husband's family to safeguard her second baby at all costs. Consumed by the weight of this expectation, she entered a state of hypervigilance, inadvertently plunging into severe clinical depression.
So I had a miscarriage during my first pregnancy. And when I became pregnant again, I was extremely cautious. I was afraid of judgment from my husband and his family because we didn't had a baby since 5 years when we got married. Everyone irritated me, including my husband. I would spend hours in front of the mirror, not appreciating my body.
Instead of receiving the understanding and support she desperately needed, Sika faced harsh judgment from her family and mother-in-law, who labeled her as mentally unstable and insisted on confining her to a psychiatric hospital.
My mother-in-law then thought I was mentally ill and suggested keeping the baby away from me.
Globally, about 10% of pregnant women and 13% of women who have just given birth experience some form of mental disorder, primarily due to depression. In severe cases, these mothers suffering from depression might experience severe symptoms that are likely to force them to commit suicide. According to the World Health Organization, about 50 to 57% of women suffer from maternal mental health issues in Ghana, with depression being the most common. Lead consultant for the WHO Maternal Mental Health Dissemination Project, Dr. Promise Sefoga, explains the various symptoms of the condition and attributed the prevalence to a lack of screening and policy.
The pregnant woman processes a lot of different thoughts across various things, including questions that she keeps on her mind. How is my baby growing? Is the baby going to be a baby boy or a baby girl? I would rather wish it was a boy. I wish it was a girl. These are the things that matter to the pregnant woman. Yeah. So all these can depress the mood sometimes during the course of pregnancy. Okay. And of course, some pregnancies get to develop other complications, which can all affect how the pregnant woman behaves. Okay. Just recently, some other work in Boku found the prevalence as high as 50.4%, meaning that virtually one out of every two pregnant women suffered postpartum depression or perinatal depression, which is what we call it now in Ghana.
The program's Officer for Non-Communicable Diseases and Mental Health at the WHO Ghana Country Office, Dr. Joanna Anson, laments deep concerns over the insufficient focus on the psychological well-being of pregnant women.
The global community has paid a lot of attention to issues relating to maternal health, to the neglect of maternal mental health. That is, in essence, we are looking at the health and well-being of a pregnant woman, through pregnancy to labor to the postpartum period. But we forget that when we define health, it also includes mental health. The burden of maternal mortality drops significantly, and we are neglecting issues relating to the mental well-being of the mother and also the infant.
I isolated myself, locked myself up in a room, trying to stay away from everybody.
In severe cases of maternal mental health, some women kill their babies. The growth physically and mentally of very young infants is likely to be affected by mothers with mental disorders. Prolonged or severe mental illnesses hamper the mother-infant attachment, breastfeeding, and infant care.
The Commission has made clear that a party agent's refusal to sign at polling centre after votes are counted does not invalidate the results of that vote. Speaking at a May Day forum by Organised Labour, Deputy Chairman of Operations at the Electoral Commission, Sam Otete, said while the signing of election results is a way of authenticating the said results, an agent's refusal to sign does not invalidate it. The following report has more.
The Electoral Commission has clarified the role of party or candidate agents in the upcoming elections. In a speech read on behalf of the EC chairperson Jean Mensah, the Commission's Deputy Chairman of Operations Samuel Tete said the failure of an agent to sign an election result does not in any way make that result invalid.
It should also be noted that an agent refusing to sign does not invalidate the results. This is an open process of the Commission to ensure acceptability of election results at all levels and prevent any election-related violence.
Samuel Tete also added that the EC has set May 7th to May 27th for updating the voters' register ahead of the December general elections. This is to allow those who just turned 18 to have their names captured in the voters' register. People who are above 18 but have yet to register for a voter's ID card also have the opportunity to do so during this window.
For this year's update of the voters' register, the Commission has set from the 7th of May to 27th of May to update the voters' register to include those who have attained the age of 18 since the last registration and those who for one or two reasons were not able to register during the last registration exercise.
Inspector General of Police, Dr. George Okufo-Dampare, who was also present at the event, assured the public of maximum security before, during, and after the December polls.
It used to be the fact that we normally start thinking of election security in the election year. And we saw that that has become a handicap and creating problems that are avoidable. So we decided that going forward, election will be seen as a process, and the next one will start where the last one ended, and making sure that election security is mainstream into normal security operations. And this led us to the establishment of Police Election Security Directorate. Were it in existence for the past 3 years, almost 3 years, the directorate has become like a police station, which is open 24 hours.
Secretary General of Trades Union Congress, Dr. Yao Ba, urged for peace during this election period.
We want peace in our country. Economically, we are not doing that good. We are really struggling, but at least we have peace.
The May Day Forum was under the theme, Election Reform, the Role of Workers and Social Partners in Securing Peaceful Elections for National Development.
Election Headquarters is brought to you by Petrosol, your clean fuel in full quantity, Chartered Institute of Management Accountants, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, together as the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants, and German Zone Medical Center, Alternative Therapy, Dental Wellness and Beauty. Election Headquarters is for an informed electorate. Let's get on to other stories. Opposition NDC is accusing the judiciary of usurping the powers of parliament. It follows this week's Supreme Court decision, which declared as unconstitutional a constitutional provision which bars rural citizens from holding high-ranking positions in Ghana. CDD fellow Professor Kwikwazan, in an earlier discussion on the polls on Joinees, backed the decision, urging Ghanaians not to worry if the Chief Justice of Ghana owes allegiance to another country.
That would be very interesting to find out. As of now, we don't know, because to the best of my knowledge and information, the opinion is not out yet.
Yes.
And so we cannot speculate as to what went through their minds, but we can accept the outcome and rejoice about the outcome, because for some of us, this is a battle that we have been waging since 2006, when they initially attempted to disqualify Mr. Akwesiyajimai as Kufuor's nominee for the Ashanti Regional Minister. And then we had the Ademu Sankedi case, and then we have Mona Kwati, we had Charles Adubuahin, and then Jechi Kwesin. So I've always had problems with the way the court and the country interpreted Article 94.2A and also Article 8.2. Now, let me be clear about what has happened.
Right.
Article 94.2A has not been touched at all by the court by this decision. Article 94.2A has not been touched at all. That is the article that disqualifies persons who owe allegiance to countries other than Ghana from becoming MP. And of course, if you cannot become MP, there are other positions that you cannot hold. For instance, you cannot be a minister, you cannot be
the president,
the lands commission, you cannot be on the public service commission, you cannot be on the electoral commission. That has not been touched.
Right.
That is in parliament right now. We are working very hard to try to amend that with Kennedy Osei-Nyakun, as you mentioned. Second, they have not touched at all Article 8.2. Article 8.2 deals with dual citizenship, and the positions excluded under that include ambassador or high commission, secretary to the cabinet, chief of defense staff, IGP, director of immigration service, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
What the Supreme Court has searched is Section 16.2 of the Citizenship Act. And this was basically a problem that I actually have gone to court with this same problem at 591. And I argued that it was unconstitutional for Parliament to add offices without specifically amending the Constitution.
But the NDC has labeled the decision as judicial legislation. Listen to member of the Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee of Parliament and MP for North Dai, Roxanne Nelson Dafiamakbo.
It's the same court that is, or that, as it were, injuncted my colleague in Parliament from carrying out his constitutional mandate based on a matter before it, which is yet to be determined. But the person proceeded to bring an application on notice for the grant of an interim injunction to prevent him from carrying out his mandate, purely because the person claimed that at the time that he filed to contest as a member of parliament, he had not denounced his Canadian citizenship. And so on that basis, he was not qualified to be elected as a member of parliament. And so eventually, when that matter was determined, he had to go back to recontest. And then he won and he's been brought back or reinstated, as it were. And so for the court to now, after 48 months,
better late than never.
Yet, I agree.
Roe versus Wade.
I agree.
Even Roe versus Wade. Centuries.
I agree. So I'm saying that I am gauging the mood of the court. Because Judge Christian, it's still some aspects of that case, it's still before the Supreme Court. So would this decision undercut what is before them? Or their view in that matter will be different? So these are the basis upon which I had the mixed feelings. But the other fundamental problem I have with the decision is that the people who advocated for this said, well, those categories of public offices which were closed to persons of dual nationality to hold in, weren't enough, so we should add more. And now more has been added. And I hear that, well, like when I came in, I heard you say that, well, then we must as well go on the full hall.
He's confined to crutches, but that does not in any way limit his ability to keep traffic flowing and the streets safe. This is a story of 47-year-old physically challenged Bernard Quay. For the past 11 years, he has found joy in directing traffic in parts of Accra when the lights fail to shine. Bernard believes this is his contribution to nation building. My colleague Emmanuel Giveno has more. Enjoy Prime's latest feature, Crutches and Courage.
It is evening rush hour and vehicular congestion is building here at the Mataheko intersection.
Forward.
In this thick congestion is Bernard, a 47-year-old physically challenged. An area of hope when the traffic lights fail to shine. For the past 11 years, Bernard has found joy in bringing order to the roads during the rush hours. His story began in 2013, the peak of erratic electricity supply, leaving many traffic lights powerless. It was then that Bernard, undeterred by his own challenges, stepped up to fill the void.
Whenever I meet any traffic light, I see that there is jam. When, within some few minutes, I'll be able to see what I could do with it, how to manage them accurately. And there will be no crash.
His presence commands respect on the road. No motorist dares to challenge his authority. Yet, despite facing ingratitude from some drivers, Bernard sees his work as a contribution to nation building, echoing the president's call to be citizens and not spectators.
Within me, I know it is from God that I'm doing this. I'm not doing it to praise anybody or to blame anybody. I do it just to praise God and to help my mind, my country, that's all. Like, to help the president, we should be citizens and not spectators.
As Bernard continues to navigate the busy intersections, he's concerned about the dysfunctional traffic lights in many parts of Accra.
We have to change the lighting system, the traffic situation, the traffic regulation field. We have to change it before things will function very well. No matter whoever, whether the police or whatever, because if the police come and stand here, the police is not the command. He is not the captain planet. He can only say stop, yes, stop. At the end of the day, what happens to the traffic? We only do that when the police stand that we do.
Bernard, whose dreams were altered by an unfortunate incident at the age of 8, remains undeterred. Confined to crutches, he now appeals for personal protective equipment to remain safe on the road.
I go to store, and then buy this reflector and the things that I'm using. With the little money I have, just to take care of the traffic. So, anything somebody thinks is recommendable for a support is anything that comes.
Stop! Stop! Please! Can a man, can a woman, please stop!
Bernard, the guardian of order, proving that strength is not always measured by physical ability, but by the resilience of the human spirit. Emmanuel Jivenu, Joy Prime.
Some victims of the flood disaster occasioned by the spillage of the Akosombo Dam last year say they are yet to get their lives back as they continue to reel under the harsh conditions aftermath. According to the National Disaster Management Organization, 39,000 lives were affected, rendering some homeless. 6 months after the disaster, the future looks bleak as the government is yet to announce resettlement and compensation plans. In an upcoming Joy News documentary, Life After the Flood, some of them tell Joy News how rebuilding the survival after the floods has become extremely difficult.
This is where I used to stay with my family.
Okay.
Yeah, so for now, the status of it is not even looking nice for you. As yourself, you can see.
Okay.
There's no one in because I'm the one. I'm not living with my sister.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very, very painful anytime when I come, when I get here. That's why if you can even see there's no cleaning. Because when I get there, when I see things, then I don't know what to touch. I don't even know where to start from. So I feel very sad.
I and Lou, I'm having cassava farm about 10 acres. And the others, they're having. In Siko right now, if you go to the farm top, every teeth turn to firewood. All our cassava turn to firewood. And we can't afford our life together. Why are we going? And up to now, the village is not saying, telling anything about our life. How are we going to survive?
The flood scattered everything because of the spirit. The piglets are all died. It take them away and nothing remains.
So at the time, you had about how many pigs in here?
I have about 85. I'm very much annoyed with VRE. And we are not hearing anything from them. My house collapsed and we are all at Agbetipu camp there. We at the tent where we are not getting it easy at all.
I remember Madonna, I made the guy. I'm in Yela senior. The Anuka Alafama Aton Emma, the Kama. Tama Nima, Fibokatama, Akrafato Tonto, Naman Yema.
Journey's hotline documentary After the Floods airs on Monday, April 29, 2024. That's how we take a break on Journey's Desk. We'll be bringing you more after this break.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to Business. My name is Daryl Kwao. Energy strategist Dr. E.T. Sulemana has called for the review of the Gold for Oil program. This follows the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors' objection to government's plans to make the Bulk Energy Storage and Transportation Company BEST the sole off-taker of the Centio Oil Refinery Limited's production under the program. Dr. Sulemana says a review will address the concerns of industry players.
And apart from these legitimate concerns, they are also arguing from purely business point of view. They are foreseeing a kind of obstruction in their ability to operate. But that said, are we going to blame the government fully for the intervention that has been made? I don't think so. From where I sit, it's early days yet. In fact, when Gold for Oil came into the scene, I had supported it until I saw the details that I made a U-turn with respect to the framework upon which it was being executed or implemented, and that brought a lot of problems. So I'm not surprised that at this moment in time, Gold for Oil has become powerless in its ability to do what it was set up to do, to prevent the currency weakness, to stem the tide on the currency weakness. It couldn't do that. And with its current framework, it's not able to do that. It will never be able to do that until we get a tweak. So why I don't go against the current intervention is the fact that Go for Oil indeed needs a tweak. I've called for them to either put it on hold or try to make a serious kind of take on the whole policy in general, because the policy as it is now in its current form, it cannot have is highly limited in its ability to be able to stem the tide with respect to what is happening within the Dansim, especially with the wild variables that are involved.
Now, the Ghana Enterprises Agency has formed a new partnership with the Association of Ghana Industries to support the Business in the Box initiative, which aims to upgrade the employment skills of more than 250,000 youth across the country. The partnership forms part of the project mandate of transferring knowledge and expertise in the industrial sector to micro, small and medium-scale enterprises throughout the country. Speaking at a short ceremony to present some items to the AGI to signify the beginning of the agreement, Chief Executive of the agency, Kosi Anki Aye, expressed confidence that the experience of AGI members will be of great benefit to beneficiary SMEs under the BizBox project.
This project that we are talking about is the Business in the Box, which is a partnership between the Ghana Enterprises Agency and MasterCard Foundation with certain and various consortium partners, of which the Association of Ghana Industries is one. The role for this program is to work closely with AGI to be able to mentor and coach the various youth across the length and breadth of this nation, to provide them with the resources and also the knowledge that the industrialists have gained over the years. It's also to work with the various industrialists to see how best we can continue to create employment through the work that we have done. And so as much as possible, we cherish and appreciate this relationship and partnership that we've built with AGI. In this new partnership going forward, as always, we would expect a lot from the Association of Ghana Industries, and I know and believe strongly that they will be able to deliver and actually go above what it is that we have set for them. You know, our targets this time around is 250,000 persons, providing support and with those for those who are in agricultural led businesses, those who are apprentices who want to become entrepreneurs, those who have MSMEs that they want to grow and strengthen. So with your support, AGI, we know that we'll be able to reach this target and to make this a success. The Ghana Enterprises Agency has budgeted 10 million cedis as a consortium partner for this project for us to go ahead and move this forward.
And that's it for the segment. The news returns after the break.